listening to Zentertainment Talk Radio on the web at www.zentertainment.org. My name is Joe Davidson, and I'm so excited that you're here today because this book that came to me, that fell into my lap, is quite revolutionary in its approach to wellness. I've been studying various things, techniques, tools, research in the field of neuroplasticity for the past year, and this book really ties in a different way to what I've been studying. I don't think that I would have gotten it had I not been doing all the work that I've been doing up to now. Let's talk about it. It's called Adrenaline Dominance. It's by Michael E. Platt, and I'm going to be sharing some excerpts from my conversation with him today. Adrenaline is a really powerful hormone, and the effects of it have been pretty much ignored by the medical community. This book explains how this hormone might be a major underlying cause of many conditions that are currently considered incurable. Things like autism, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, ADHD, anxiety disorders, weight gain, interstitial cystitis, bedwetting in children, bipolar disorders, alcoholism. There are many more conditions as well. And this book explains why people produce this fight or flight hormone even when they're not facing danger. It also describes how adrenaline works in the body and how high levels of it can cause serious medical problems. It presents a natural protocol for rapidly reducing this excess adrenaline. And in most cases, or some cases, but in many cases, this protocol allows patients to reassess their need for taking prescription medications. So instead of treating symptoms, it's getting to the root cause of the conditions. This is a very different approach, and Michael Platt is internationally known for his innovative approach to natural hormone replacement. It's something different that we don't hear from a lot of doctors. So check this book out. And as always, when I'm bringing you things that are outside of the box, I need to say that this information is intended for educational purposes only. It's not intended as a substitute for licensed healthcare advice, diagnosis, or treatment. So always seek advice from your own doctor. Thank you so much for being here. And this is Michael Platt. Can you define adrenaline dominance and how a person might know for sure that that's what's involved in the picture for them?
Well, first of all, adrenaline is a hormone that everybody's heard about, but nobody ever talks about. And it's a very powerful hormone. It's a survival hormone. And in the old days, thousands of years ago, the only time the body ever put out adrenaline was in times of danger. And as soon as the danger passed, then the adrenaline levels would go down. But nowadays, there are people that are putting out adrenaline all day and all night, and they're not in danger. And what happens is that this very powerful hormone is causing a lot of effects in the body that can lead to chronic and fairly severe medical conditions that felt to be incurable, but are actually easy to get rid of.
Could you maybe talk about some of the conditions that you've discovered are connected to adrenaline dominance?
Okay. Well, there are a lot of people that put out adrenaline at night, and these are the people that toss and turn or might have restless leg syndrome, or people that grind their teeth at night, or people that wake up at 2:30 in the morning because adrenaline gives urinary urgency. And a lot of people wake up with low back pain and pain along the side of the hips because they're keeping their muscle tense. And during the day, people might have constipation, and probably the most common cause of constipation is what they call irritable bowel syndrome, which is also caused by too much adrenaline. And people that have anxiety, people that have a lot of anger and road rage, people that have fibromyalgia, people that find that they're nervous all the time, people under stress, it just goes on and on. And when people internalize anger, that's where depression comes from. People that have a lot of anger get involved in drugs and alcohol. And I would venture to say that 100% of people in AA have too much adrenaline. People with PTSD, it just goes on and on. All professional athletes have too much adrenaline. Well, even diabetes is exacerbated by adrenaline, and we'll go into that later, and certainly hypertension.
When you say adrenaline, are you talking about the same thing as fight or flight, or in neuroplasticity, some of the research, what they would refer to as a limbic system impairment? Is that the same thing?
Well, the thing about adrenaline, it's a hormone, but it's also a neurotransmitter in the brain. And in the brain, it can certainly affect the limbic system. You know, limbic system is sort of a large system, but it does involve things like memory and whatever. And people with a lot of adrenaline, because as a neurotransmitter, it makes the brain go very quickly, will always have memory problems or the complaint about brain fog or and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm talking about adrenaline, I'm talking about, again, both the hormone and the neurotransmitter and how it can affect people.
Why do some people seem to thrive so much in careers? I mean, so many careers are based on adrenaline. CEOs, executives, performers, artists. Actually, a lot of people, they have very stressful jobs. They never, ever get sick. And then somebody else does. Why?
Well, here's the thing. Adrenaline, as a hormone, gives people energy. And as a neurotransmitter, it gives people intelligence and enhances their creativity. The heads of every corporation in the world have a lot of adrenaline, and it's adrenaline that allows them to be successful. The reason why people are successful professional athletes is because of adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why actors and actresses can thrive also is mm-hmm. because of adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
There are good parts to adrenaline. It's only when you have excessive adrenaline when it does affect you. But all these executives that seem to be doing well and being healthy, but you'll also find that very often they have anger issues. They may drink more than they should just to chill out, just to relax. And it does create stress, and stress is probably the number one thing that speeds up the aging process. So they may appear to thrive, but they may not be thriving as well as you think they are.
Let's talk a little bit about adrenal fatigue, which is commonly diagnosed. If somebody has very low cortisol, can they also have high adrenaline?
And naturopaths have a tendency to do hormone testing using saliva. Now, one of the characteristics of adrenaline is that as part of the fight or flight, it causes reduction of circulation to certain areas of the body that are not needed for survival. When you hear about people that have cold hands or cold feet, this is not a low thyroid. This is adrenaline constricting blood vessels. And the same thing, when people have irritable bowel syndrome, this is, again, adrenaline constricting circulation to the intestines, which are not needed for survival. Well, one of the other places that the body restricts circulation to is the salivary glands. So when people have a lot of adrenaline, the hormones in the saliva are always wrong, and especially cortisol. So the thing is that if you have somebody that you do a saliva test looking for cortisol and do a blood test at the same time, you'll find that the cortisol levels are actually high in the blood, but they're low in the saliva. But because of these low cortisol levels in the saliva, this is where they come up with the term adrenal fatigue. But if you look at the symptoms of adrenal fatigue, they're all adrenaline. They're all the same symptoms as adrenaline dominance. So that's where the confusion is. So to answer your question, yes, if somebody has a low level of cortisol in the saliva, yes, they can have a lot of adrenaline, and the DHEA level can be normal. It won't be on the low side.
How does someone know when they do have more of an adrenal condition versus the adrenaline?
Well, yeah, adrenal insufficiency or Addison's disease, and that's a very serious condition, could actually be life-threatening.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the blood cortisol would be low, and so would the DHEA level. Both of them would be extremely low.
So you couldn't have a high DHEA and have Addison's?
No, absolutely not.
That's very interesting, because when I think of adrenaline and the times that I've had adrenaline, say when I was performing, you feel good, you're more alert, you have more energy. So it's hard to understand, and I know for a lot of people listening who are dealing, you know, with various conditions where the fatigue is extraordinary, they say, how could I have adrenaline when I can barely walk down the street?
Right.
Well,
here's the thing. When people have a lot of adrenaline, one of the classic things that happens is it keeps their muscle tense. Remember, it's fight or flight. They're ready to fight or run away. And when people keep muscle tense, it uses up a tremendous amount of energy. That's why people who have fibromyalgia, this is one of the things they'll complain about is fatigue. And because all that energy is being expended just keeping that muscle tense. And if you want, later on, we can talk about fibromyalgia, because even though doctors say it's incurable, I've always told my patients that if they're having pain, fibromyalgia is the best thing they can have, because it's the easiest thing to get rid of.
It's really interesting. When you have worked with people, just the testimonials you've seen, the experiences you've seen, if people treat the adrenaline dominance, do a lot of these incurable symptoms just kind of go by the wayside?
Absolutely. Okay, here's the thing. Reducing adrenaline won't eradicate viruses by itself, but reducing adrenaline will improve the immune system. But I don't want people to get confused. Fibromyalgia is not a viral condition.
Right, it's different. Let's talk a little bit more about the brain. And you wrote that the brain uses more sugar than any other part of the body.
Okay, so let's go back to what you're saying, is that yes, the brain does use more sugar than any other part of the body. And going one step further, people that are creative, and there's a lot of creative type people out there, the creative brain requires a lot more sugar than a normal brain because it's more active. And again, this is where the problem with adrenaline comes up, is because from a survival standpoint, the body always wants to make sure the brain has enough fuel. For example, you may have heard of people that fall asleep when they're driving, and these are the people that can go off the road and hit a tree and kill themselves. So the body always wants to make sure the brain is alert. So anytime the body feels that the brain is running out of fuel, it puts out adrenaline to raise sugar levels. And unfortunately, in that situation, people have no control over how much sugar is going to be made. And this happens during the night. That's why people wake up during the night, especially around 2:30, which is the classic time that adrenaline comes out. And so if they're putting out adrenaline during the night, which is raising sugar levels, and they're not burning up that sugar, all that extra sugar now is going to be put into their fat cells for storage. And so when you hear about people that are gaining weight while they're sleeping, this is because they're putting out adrenaline. And it gets worse from a weight standpoint because as soon as the body puts out adrenaline, which creates stress, then the body puts out cortisol to deal with the stress. And the first thing cortisol does, it raises sugar levels, which also will stimulate insulin. And so all this extra sugar is going into the fat cells. And I suspect it may be perhaps the most common, or one of the most common reasons why people are fighting weight all the time is because they're putting out excess adrenaline.
That's really interesting. So, how does this apply for people who have low blood sugar, hypoglycemia, and then the people who are fighting, dealing with diabetes or other conditions that involve high blood sugar, or just let's say unbalanced?
The people, when people experience hypoglycemia, and this is very often, some people get sleepy after they eat because as soon as they put food in the mouth, they're putting out insulin. And some people get sleepy between 3 and 4 in the afternoon, which is the time that insulin levels peak. And a lot of people get sleepy in a car because the brain actually uses up a lot of fuel just looking out the window. You know, the brain is processing all the scenery that's going by. So these are the times that people get sleepy. And as soon as the body detects that low sugar, the hypoglycemia, the body will be putting out adrenaline. And then now with diabetics, very often it's people running high sugars again because they're putting out adrenaline all the time. And this is why with most diabetics, their blood sugars are highest in the morning because they've been putting out blood sugar all night, in response to adrenaline. You know, in my book, Adrenaline Dominance, I talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And the good part of having excess adrenaline is ADHD, which may sound surprising to a lot of people because ADHD has a bad publicist. The fact is that the most intelligent, successful, creative people in the world have ADHD. In fact, there's nobody famous you've ever heard of who does not have ADHD. You know, all doctors, all lawyers, all scientists, you know, most business people, you know, have ADHD. Certainly, everybody in Hollywood is a creative type ADHD. And remember, creative people have the most adrenaline. And when you talk about hypoglycemia, people that are creative, these are the ones that if they go too long without eating will start getting shaky and irritable, which they call hypoglycemia, but it's actually the adrenaline that's causing that shakiness and irritability.
I was actually doing a program for about 8 months myself, based on a lot of neuroplasticity things. And the goal of it, which is the goal of a lot of these programs, is to bring the fight or flight, which is kind of unconscious. They say it gets harmed by various toxins, etc., in the brain, and to calm that down. And I found that it was extremely helpful for multiple chemical sensitivity. I have not found it at all helpful for viral things, etc. I think it helps a lot of people with fibromyalgia and different things. So, but there's these links that connect to what your book is talking about. And I even found this preacher guy online. He's too extreme for me and some of his things. But interestingly enough, he's talking a lot about some of these same concepts. He doesn't label it adrenaline. He labels it fight or flight and talks about what it does in the brain. But I guess he's really kind of saying the same thing.
Well, there are a number of people that actually talk about conditions related to adrenaline, like fight or flight, or a lot of people talk about ADHD. Even though they talk about ADHD, they never mention adrenaline. Even like Dr. Amen, who's
Yeah,
like a world famous
right.
ADHD person, he never talks about adrenaline. And nobody talks about how to treat these people. And because, it's real, actually very simple to lower adrenaline. You can get a significant lowering of adrenaline in just 24 hours. So I'm not talking about long-term treatment.
The things in the book that I noticed, two things, progesterone and diet. So should somebody be, tested first to see what their progesterone levels are before trying this treatment?
I've been in practice probably close to 40 years. I have never done a progesterone level. I've done hormone tests, which included progesterone levels, but I've never really needed to do a progesterone level because all a lot of doctors should have been, if they haven't been, they should have been taught in medical school that the way you diagnose a patient is to sit down and talk to them. And 90% of a diagnosis is talking to a patient, and yet doctors don't sit down and talk anymore. Basically, they look at lab tests, they're treating lab tests, and that's not probably the best thing to do because you can never go wrong treating a patient, but you can go awfully wrong treating a lab test. And so when it comes, so the thing is that if a woman is having cramps or PMS with her periods, then she's low on progesterone. You don't need to do a blood test. Now the thing about men don't put out a lot of progesterone, and they stop making progesterone at the age of 50. So after the age of 50, you don't have to do blood tests in any sex because the levels are always going to be low.
So it's safe for men
So,
and women to take progesterone in general, you think?
well, actually, progesterone is good for men, women, and children. I treated, children that are, 1.5, 2 years old, and they do very well with progesterone. And I am absolutely 100% convinced that autism is all related to adrenaline, excess adrenaline. To me, they represent severe types of what I call the creative type ADHD. And they respond wonderfully to progesterone. And the way I've approached any condition is always to treat the cause. And doctors don't do that. They just give out Band-Aids.
What's the protocol? How does somebody know a dose and when should they take it?
There's a lot of misinformation about a lot of things, and when it comes to medicine, and one of the biggest is that, again, they feel that progesterone is a woman's hormone. It's not. Men and women have the identical hormones, and the other thing is that most doctors think that progesterone is really just an anti-estrogen hormone, so it can be used to get rid of cramps and PMS and breast tenderness, and if women have menstrual migraines, it actually eliminates those in 3 minutes. Even though, one of the big problems is that women go to gynecologists, and if you don't mind my saying, gynecologists seem to have the least knowledge of hormones of all doctors. And the fact that they use birth control pills is so abusive to women, and women don't realize this because when they take birth control pills, they stop ovulating. Now they have no progesterone because they're no longer ovulating.
Do you think long-term use of them is harmful?
I think short-term use is harmful.
Okay.
Because the problem is that they start developing polycystic ovaries and fibroids, endometriosis. They'll later on they'll have trouble getting pregnant, and people don't realize that estrogen is a very toxic hormone. It causes asthma, causes migraine headaches, gallbladder disease, 6 different cancers, and it amazes me that they allow estrogen to be sold on the market. It's actually illegal to sell any chemical that causes cancer, and they give estrogen to animals to fatten them, like chicken and cattle. So, and again, it's illegal to put any kind of chemical into animals that will be sold for food consumption that has a cancer-causing chemical. I don't know how they get away with it, but they do. My whole life I've been taking women off estrogen.
Right.
you know, the fact that my mother died of breast cancer sort of contributed to this, and she was on Premarin.
Progesterone. I read in your book that it's done 3 times a day before meals. Why is it done right before eating?
Well, here's the thing. You know, I started saying that most people think that it's an anti-estrogen hormone, and it is. But it's also a hormone that controls insulin. So people that are using progesterone will find they never get sleepy after eating, they'll never get sleepy in the afternoon, and they'll never get sleepy when they're driving. And because the problem is, if you want to control adrenaline, you can't afford to let people get hypoglycemic, because the body will be pouring out a lot of adrenaline when they get sleepy, when they get hypoglycemic. So it blocks insulin. And the other thing, so the reason why it's used before meals is because, again, as soon as people put food in their mouth, they will be putting out insulin. So the ideal time is to do it right before eating. And considering the fact that it only lasts for about 6 minutes in the bloodstream because it attaches to so many receptor sites, that this is why that 1 to 3 minutes is really the preferred time. Now, and it also, I use it to block adrenaline. And this is why when if somebody is very anxious, nervous, whatever, you give them some progesterone, within about 3 minutes, they're nice and relaxed. They can start focusing because the brain settles down. But in order to do that, you need the correct strength, and you need at least 50 milligram dosage to control adrenaline. And that's why, you know, I had some progesterone cream specially made up, which is the strongest one you get without a prescription. And it has the same therapeutic quality as what they would get at a compounding pharmacy, but less expensive. But, you know, progesterone certainly is my favorite hormone. The only time that I've seen where people are using progesterone and they get sleepy or excuse me, tired, is that, remember, progesterone blocks adrenaline. And the thing is that when people have an underlying low thyroid, that'll come out. Because, you know, before, you know, people with low thyroid will feel tired. And but they have adrenaline, you know, but if they have excess adrenaline, they can mask that fatigue. But as soon as you lower their adrenaline, then the underlying low thyroid comes out. You lower the adrenaline, and then you raise their thyroid level. If you have somebody that has a lot of adrenaline, their thyroid is always going to be messed up. So, and usually the problem is that doctors, when they do thyroid tests, you know, they'll do a TSH test. And if the TSH test is within normal limits, they're not going to do any more testing. And but people don't realize there's no such thing as a normal TSH level. And there are other conditions where the brain, where the pituitary doesn't even put out TSH. It's called secondary hypothyroidism. So you can't go by just looking at TSH level. You have to look at the free T3 and the free T4. But when I have somebody and I'm treating their thyroid, I want to get their thyroid levels, both the T3 and the T4, up to close to the upper limits of normal. Because remember, the thyroid controls metabolism in every cell of the body. It's an important hormone.
All right, so
But
if
I can do that because I get adrenaline levels down, so they can tolerate thyroid.
so, what would be some of the first drugs, natural or synthetic, what would you go to start with someone?
Usually, I almost always will use a combination of two different thyroid pills. NatureThroid is good. Armour is okay. It's a little bit more expensive than NatureThroid. But the only problem with NatureThroid and Armour is that they never have enough T4 in it. And the reason for that, they're really bioidentical for pigs. They're not bioidentical for humans. And so it's a little bit of a different ratio. And so people that are taking NatureThroid or Armour will almost always have low T4 levels. And a lot of doctors will say, well, that doesn't matter because T4 doesn't do anything. Well, I disagree with that. I think it has a large effect on skin, nails, and hair. And so you'll find that people in Armour or NatureThroid very often will still have the heels will crack, which is a classic sign of a low thyroid.
Let's talk a little bit about, well, just to summarize, so the progesterone you suggest 50 milligrams 3 times a day. If someone reacts, can they get benefit by going a lower dose, or should they just keep with
Oh,
that dose?
yes, absolutely. You know, when it comes to hormones, especially with progesterone, you really have to treat the person rather than just do an arbitrary dose. But actually, for many of my people, I start them on 4 times a day. These are especially the creative type people, because remember, they have the most adrenaline.
Yes.
If somebody's putting out adrenaline at night, they have to use progesterone before going to sleep. Have to.
Okay.
And I just want to say one thing here. People have to be cautionary that they do not want oral progesterone. They want to use a cream. And the reason for that is that the oral progesterone always converts into a different hormone called allopregnanolone. The problem is that when you do a lab test on somebody taking oral progesterone, they look like they have high levels of progesterone. But the only reason it looks high is that the allopregnanolone is being mistaken for progesterone, and the levels are high because it's not attaching to receptor sites, because it's not progesterone. And that's why a lot of doctors think that it's better to give oral, because you get higher levels, but it's not progesterone.
Along with this, you had some diet recommendations, and I wonder if you could share how to manage adrenaline dominance through diet.
When it comes to adrenaline, the reason why the body is putting out all this adrenaline is just to raise sugar levels for the brain. So right away you can see that if people are eating correctly, or in other words, providing the right fuel to the brain, the body won't have the need to put out adrenaline. So eating correctly is an extremely important part of getting lowering adrenaline. And so when I say that the brain uses the most sugar, I'm not talking about candy and soda. You want sugars that don't produce a lot of insulin, because the insulin will keep on lowering the sugar and won't get to the brain. So these are what are called the low glycemic carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
Green vegetables are the perfect sugar for the brain because they're zero glycemic.
Mm-hmm.
And, so green vegetables are a great fuel for the brain, but not the best. The best fuel for the brain is something like coconut oil.
Mm.
And as you know, coconut oil is now being used to treat Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. Because coconut oil helps to converts into what are called ketone bodies, and ketone bodies are what you help to get rid of or prevent something called type 3 diabetes, which is insulin resistance in the brain. What this basically means is that the insulin can't get sugar into the brain cells. Remember, the brain needs sugar. So this is part of almost every neurodegenerative type illness is type 3 diabetes. Meats are zero glycemic, which means they don't produce any insulin at all. Fat produces no insulin, so that's healthy. Green vegetables, basically, if people eliminated the white stuff, the sugar, the white rice, the corn, white potatoes,
mm-hmm.
Anybody doing that is going to be a lot healthier.
So that's just going to help right there. A lot of people listening to this show already are on very, healthy diets and really aware, but still having a lot of problems. So that's why I kind of dig into it. What's that missing thing?
What people, especially the creative type people, and there are a lot of people with, and remember, these are the people with the most adrenaline. These are the people that need to eat something before they go to sleep. And so sometimes what I recommend is that if they're eating like a green vegetable for dinner, is to eat half of those. And then right before they go to sleep, they eat the other half. And again, they're going to be using progesterone cream right before they do that, and they should sleep throughout the whole night. They won't have to get up at night to urinate. You may have heard of a condition called chronic interstitial cystitis.
Uh-huh.
It's a devastating condition. These are women that have pain in the bladder 24 hours a day and severe burning when they urinate. And again, it's caused by excess adrenaline. And because adrenaline gives people that urge to urinate, and a lot of women can't run to the bathroom every 20 minutes, so they keep their bladder muscle tense, and they build up lactic acid. I call it fibromyalgia of the bladder because it's the same thing that causes the pain of fibromyalgia, which is the buildup of lactic acid, so from keeping the muscle tense. So very easy to fix, even though doctors say that it's incurable. When you hear about women that vomit throughout their entire pregnancy, again, this is always caused by adrenaline, and they don't recognize it.
Length of this protocol, someone wants to start doing the progesterone. Is this something they continue a long time or they do for a short time?
They're always going to be putting out insulin and adrenaline. They always will be. So so they will probably be using it for a long time. They will not have to use it four times a day. Once they start building up levels,
yeah.
They could probably go down to twice a day, sometimes even once a day.
Yeah.
But to start out with, if they want to get really good relief, they want to control as much insulin and adrenaline as they can. So they need to do it before every meal and at bedtime if they have problems sleeping. Tossing, turning, grinding their teeth, all this, that's adrenaline.
And in your experience, it doesn't build up any negative consequences or side effects to do it longer term?
I've been doing hormones for over 20 years now. I have never had a problem with people getting, you can't overdose on progesterone. It cannot happen. There's only one downside to progesterone, which is very rare, but it can happen. I don't know if you want me to go into this, but
sure.
One of the ways that progesterone works, I believe, because there are no studies in this, is that it actually goes to insulin receptor sites on cells and prevents the insulin from putting sugar into the cells, and this is why people don't get hypoglycemic. Well, if it does the same thing in the brain, you know, in other words, it can increase insulin resistance in the brain, and that's not good because the body will think that the brain cells are still not getting enough sugar because there's insulin resistance in the brain, so they'll start putting out more adrenaline. And this can happen. It happens very rarely, but that's perhaps the only downside. And in that case, you have to lower the adrenaline, not eliminate it, but lower it. Certainly lower the progesterone.
Lower the progesterone. Right.
So, but in general, you know, I had a fellow who came to see me and he said that, you know, he complained that every morning he would wake up and vomit. And when he was a kid, every time he got excited, he would start vomiting, couldn't stop, would have to be hospitalized. They call it cyclical vomiting syndrome. And again, another condition felt to be incurable. So he's sitting in front of me. He's grasping the sides of the chairs. I could just feel the adrenaline in this fellow because adrenaline is the only thing that causes morning vomiting. And I put some progesterone cream on his arm, and we started talking. And 5 minutes later, he sat back. He said, "Doc, my entire life, I have never felt this good."
Oh, that's awesome.
And it's been about 6 years. He's not had one episode of vomiting since he left my office.
That's great.
When you hear about things like idiopathic neuropathy, I don't know if you've ever heard this. It's really a diabetic neuropathy, but if the patient's not diabetic, then they say it's idiopathic, which means they don't know what causes it.
Right.
Because they don't know the cause of anything. But anyway.
Yeah.
So, again, this is always caused by adrenaline for two different reasons. Number one, the adrenaline keeps on causing sugar to be produced. And as soon as the body produces sugar, the body puts out insulin. So they're actually putting out insulin all day, which is incredibly damaging to nerves. And then the other thing is that the adrenaline is constricting the blood vessels, the microcirculation going to the nerves and the feet. So the patients get a double whammy. And again, it's treated and with both progesterone and eating correctly to lower adrenaline. And progesterone by itself is the number one stimulus to the production of myelin, which is how nerves communicate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a wonderful hormone for people with
MS,
any nerve condition, especially MS, which mm-hmm. is a demyelinating condition. I don't like drugs. If you had read my other book, it's called The Miracle of Bioidentical Hormones, which I actually got in a lot of trouble for because the experts for the medical board felt the idea that this book was so dangerous that I shouldn't be practicing medicine.
Right.
But all the book talked about was treating the underlying cause of illness
right.
and getting people off drugs.
Yeah.
And so in my experience, any patient that ever came in to see me, probably 99% of the time, I got them off every one of their medications. Now, progesterone makes it very easy because, you know, a lot of people are on pain medication for fibromyalgia or they're on antidepressants or anti-anxiety agents, all caused by adrenaline. Diabetics also have high sugars because very often because they keep on putting out adrenaline. In other words, the bottom line is that if people treat the underlying cause of an illness, most times they can get them off medications. And like I alluded to, progesterone makes it a lot easier.
I wanted to ask you about another drug that I had heard of called prazosin that's used sometimes for post-traumatic stress disorder, but also kind of off-label for people with high adrenaline. And I wondered if you have any experience with that. Obviously, I know what you just said about drugs, but is that an option for people as well, or no?
Let me put it like this. I've never used it because, again, I approach adrenaline from a different direction.
Right.
But it's the same thing with beta blockers also block adrenaline, and they've used beta blockers also for PTSD.
Right.
Prazosin is not a beta blocker. Prescription drugs, they cause 400,000 deaths a year. They're the fourth leading cause of death. And who knows how many hospital admissions because of drug toxicity. Mm-hmm. It's probably one of my favorite supplements is vitamin D. Vitamin D is actually not a vitamin. It's a pro-hormone, converts directly into a hormone. But because they call it a vitamin, like a fat-soluble vitamin, very often vitamin D is mixed with oil. And this is where they have what are called gel caps, and I don't recommend gel caps because the oil actually impairs the absorption of the vitamin D. The thing about vitamin D is that people know that it puts calcium into bones, but it unfortunately can also put calcium into blood vessels. And adding the vitamin K prevents that from happening. In fact, vitamin K can actually take calcium out of blood vessels and put it into the bones. But vitamin K does everything that vitamin D does. It prevents cancer, prevents dementia, prevents type 2 diabetes. In other words, you get a great 1-2 punch when you use the two of them together. You know, Institute of Medicine says 400 units a day,
no,
sometimes
that's
600. I know. I start people on 50,000 units for the first 2 weeks just to build up their levels. But then they should be on a minimum of 15,000 units a day.
You mentioned, when we go back to the brain, you mentioned fish oil. For people who do not tolerate fish oil, what's another option?
Well, you have chia seeds and flax oil, which are omega-3s.
Mm-hmm.
The omega-6 is the inflammatory one, so I don't think it's necessary
to balance that, it.
The body will, it's necessary to balance if you're taking 6, but if you're taking just 3, you don't need to balance it. Like, and chia seeds, you don't have to grind.
Right.
The flax seeds, you do.
Yeah. Bipolar disorder, depression. Can you talk a little bit about adrenaline dominance, which is never discussed that I've heard of in these conditions?
Well, you know, when it comes to depression, there's basically two different types of depression. One is what's called a reactive depression, where somebody dies or you lose a job or just something terrible happens and people are depressed about it.
Mm-hmm.
But more commonly, they have what's called an endogenous depression, and this is where people are depressed, but they don't know why they're depressed. And the most common cause of of an endogenous depression is internalization of anger. Anger is a very powerful emotion. And when people internalize it, it just has a terrible effect on the body. And the most common cause of anger is adrenaline. It's the anger hormone. You know, that's where road rage comes in.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, which is, you can get rid of road rage in just 24 hours. That's all that takes.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing about bipolar disorders, the only thing that causes a bipolar disorder is adrenaline, and this is where somebody has ADHD and very often, which will be associated with a lot of adrenaline, and they may get, you know, problems related to that, and then they start putting these people on antidepressants, and a lot of antidepressants actually increase adrenaline levels. These are what are called the norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors,
uh-huh.
NRIs.
Uh-huh.
Wellbutrin is a classic example of this, but uh-huh. Effexor and Cymbalta, and
it actually makes it worse, doesn't it?
It does. And fibromyalgia, if you watch the Lyric advertisements, you know, they talk about oversensitized nerve ending. Fibromyalgia, the pain, it's just a buildup of lactic acid, and you get that because the muscles are, you know, you're keeping muscle tense, which block the circulation. You're cutting off the venules, the little veins that carry lactic acid, cutting off the lymphatic circulation, which also carries lactic acid out of the muscles, so the acid just sits and causes pain. So as soon as you relax those muscles, now the circulation can clear up the acid and fibromyalgia goes. It's a very easy condition to get rid of. And you know, it's almost always associated with low thyroid, but that's neither here nor there. And you just have to lower their adrenaline. And it's one of the nice things about treating the underlying cause, mm-hmm. because these are people that are very grateful. I've never had a patient where I did not get rid of fibromyalgia or a bipolar disorder. I've gotten all these people off drugs.
Can these kind of things be passed genetically? And also, what are the spiritual and emotional roots of the things that actually produce the high adrenaline?
You know, people inherit hormones from their parents. So if you have one child with ADHD, that means their parents have ADHD. And the brothers and sisters of ADHD. It's an ADHD world. It's just not recognized. And remember, ADHD is all about adrenaline. You know, when you hear about kids that are hyperactive, that's adrenaline.
Yeah.
And when you hear about kids that have ADD, these are the kids that have trouble focusing and learning, but they're not hyperactive.
Right.
But they're hyperactive in the brain, and these are the creative type ADHDs. And these are the kids that always have too much weight, you know, because they have all the adrenaline making sugar, but they're not active, so they're not burning it up.
So interesting. It's just so interesting. Thanks for writing this book and sharing it. And I want everybody to get it and read it and show it to their doctors. They're good doctors. You know, the doctors who aren't so good are not going to get this at
Well,
all.
you mentioned functional medicine, and the whole idea behind functional medicine is treating the cause of disease. So my feeling is that all functional medical doctors should know about adrenaline because
Right.
it causes so many conditions.
Well, I don't know about you, but I think this is the most fascinating information. I just love this book, Adrenaline Dominance, Michael Platt. You can find out more at plattwellness.com, and that's P-L-A-T-T, wellness.com. Thank you all so much. Get the book. Let me know what you think. You've been listening to Zentertainment Talk Radio on the web at zentertainment.org. And my name is Joe Davidson. I hope you have a great week and continued blessings for your health and well-being. Catch you next time.